Feeding the Flame by Tuesday Love Sang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 5. 100 men may make a camp, but it takes a woman to make a home. "Tisk, tisk," said the old man to Miss Cleo, who was sitting, admiring the sunshine, coming in through a parting of the curtains. She turned her head wisely and gazed through those beautiful blue eyes. "Tisk, tisk," he repeated, as if enjoying the sound. "I wish I was a rich author and had an extensive reference library," he said. "Do you know how many books I have, Clee?" The old man turned his head and looked at the only books he possessed: a dictionary, a diabetic's manual, a medical handbook for ship's captains, a book about countries' flags, a Payette catalogue about radio stuff from Montreal, a Canadian-type catalogue from Toronto, and, of course, a very large atlas, so large that it just about takes two men and a dog to lift the thing. It's certainly an atlas too large and too heavy for a poor wretch confined to bed. "And that's all this author's library, Clee," said the old man with that wry laugh. "Rather a pity, though, because the number of things people ask, well, it would be enough to make my hair stand on end if I weren't bald. Still, this is wasting time. We have to get on with our book, Miss Clee, and you and Taddy can go and enjoy the sunshine while I work for the daily bread." Mrs. Sorok, our old friend Valerie Sorok, asks about sleep. "Good gracious me, Mrs. Sorok, don't you know what sleep is?" Anyway, quite a number of people have asked the same thing, so let's see what we can do about it. On the physical plane, a body works and builds up a lot of toxins. A lot of poisons accumulate in the muscles. When we work too hard at a given task, using the same muscles, crystals form in the muscular tissue, and, being wretchedly sharp things, they dig in when we continue moving and make us feel stiff, so we soon stop moving. All the organs of the body get suffused with toxins, and so, after a time, it's necessary for man to lie down and go to sleep so that the body mechanism slows down, becomes almost static, and during that period of sleep, the toxins which cause tiredness and muscular stiffness dissipate or disperse so that, when we wake up, we're as good as new. All the stiffness has gone, all the aches and pains have gone, and people feel very refreshed. At least, they do if they go to bed early enough and get enough rest. Otherwise, if people have been out drinking, they have overloaded the body mechanism badly, and they suffer from a hangover. But we're not discussing drunks and their ilk. We're discussing your attitude towards sleep, you, the sensible people. So, on the ordinary physical plane, when we sleep, it is with the purpose of dissipating toxins and crystals, which make one sluggish, tired, and full of aches and pains. But there is more to sleep than this. Just as school children go home at the end of the school day, so does the human psyche have to go home at frequent intervals. If a human had to stay completely awake all the time, he would find life insupportable. All manner of strange physical manifestations would occur. So he goes into a period of sleep to the astral world for recuperation. Think of school children who had to stay in class for 24 hours a day. Well, of course they couldn't do it, but supposing they had to, soon they would not be able to learn anything, and soon they would be completely insane with fatigue, and it's the same with adults. During sleep, the physical body is left prone upon a bed. Most time it's upon a bed anyhow. Enough times, in fact, for us to say, prone upon a bed. At such times, the physical body is resting there and just sleeping off the effects of existing for yet another day. The driver of the body, the psyche, is away. So the body mechanism, called the subconscious, takes over, and all sorts of reflex actions occur in the body. Often the eyes will roll behind shut eyelids. Often the body will gasp and groan or snort, and there is much threshing about because the body exercises a certain amount during sleep in order that crystals and toxins may be dispersed and dissipated more rapidly. That is why people are moving quite a lot when they're asleep. And no one ever stays completely immobile during sleep. If they did, they would have a fresh load of toxins at the point of contact between the body and the bed, because all the time the same flesh would be compressed. The subconscious, during this sleep period, is completely freed from the control of the psyche, and so it, in effect, wanders among the memory file cards, something like an idiot boy who can grasp a file card here or perhaps two or three file cards there. If one card only is picked, and remember that we should have put card in quotes to show that it's not really a card, but we're just using a symbolic item here. If you like, we could make it clearer, saying that a memory cluster is tapped. If that memory cluster, then, is tapped, we get a dream which can be quite clear about one specific event. But if two or three memory clusters, let's call them cards and have done with it, are picked, then the dream becomes a fantasy because, purely as an illustration, we can have a dream or adventure in which a fish is riding down the road on horseback because the memory picked up may have been of a big fish, and then superimposed upon it will be the memory of a person on a horseback. If these two memory cards are superimposed, then we get the distorted impression of a fish on horseback. If you have an interest in slide projection with 35mm transparencies, you will know that you can get a very clear picture by having just one slide in your projector. But if you stick in two slides, then you get something which never happened. You get one picture superimposed on the other. And if you get three slides in, well, then you get a lot of confusion. It's the same with your dreams. The dream is a simple thing, just an ordinary, straightforward memory. But when it becomes tinged or overpowered with a different memory card, then you get a fantasy or even a nightmare. You dream of things which are quite impossible, things which could never happen, and then, if you have retained any control of your memory when your psyche returns to the body, you will say that you had a nightmare. During sleep, when the psyche is away, the built-in sensor of the body also is sleeping. And so, some of the memories or fantasies may be erotic or sadistic, and so we get those terrible dreams of which people sometimes write in and they say, "Gee, what happened to me?" It is impossible to confuse astral travel with dreams or nightmares, because in dreams there is nearly always some inconsistency, some improbability. There is always some element which is at variance with what you know to be fact. The colors may be wrong, or you may, for example, see a person with the head of a tiger. It can be determined with a little practice. That which is a dream and that which is astral travel. Memories of dreams and memories of astral travel follow the same path into one's awareness when one is awake. When the psyche comes back and the body awakens, it may say, "Oh, I had a terrible dream last night." Or, if the person has training and knows how to astral travel consciously, then he comes back with a complete knowledge of all he has done. The body is still rested, the toxins are still dispersed, but the psyche has retained the information of what happened in the astral world. Some school children have a holiday and they're so excited at coming back to school that everything that happened during the holiday completely disappears from their brains or from their memories. And in just the same way, people coming back from astral travel may forget completely all that happened in the excitement of starting another day. It cannot be too often repeated that if one wants to remember astral travel, then one just simply must say to oneself 3 times before going to sleep, "I will sleep soundly and restfully, and in the morning I will be aware of all that I have done in the astral." Repeat that 3 times before going to sleep, and if you really think what you are saying, and if you really mean what you are saying, then you will remember when you awaken. There's nothing magical about it. It's just getting through to a rather stupid subconscious and saying, in effect, "Hey, bud, you've got to keep alert tonight. No playing about and gumming up the works with my memories. You keep out of the way, ready for a fresh load of memories when I return." Of course, the person who is trained in astral travel can astral travel when he's fully awake. It is quite usual for the trained person to sit down in a chair, clasp his hands and put his feet close together, and then just close his eyes. He can then will himself to leave the body and go anywhere and stay fully conscious during the whole period of astral travel, so that when the astral travel rejoins the physical body, there is brought back a completely retained memory of all that happened. That takes practice, of course, and a bit of self-discipline. It is not difficult to train oneself to remember all that happened when the body is asleep. You just have to tell your subconscious to shut up, exactly as you tell an unruly schoolboy to shut up. The first telling is more or less a waste of time. At the second telling, the subconscious jumps to awareness. And with the third telling, it is hoped that the command sinks in and the subconscious will obey. But if you do this for a few nights, you will find that the subconscious does obey. Many people like to keep a notebook and pencil by the bedside so that immediately upon awakening in the morning, the knowledge of what happened in the night can be written down. Otherwise, with the press and turmoil of modern living, there's a great tendency to forget what happened. A poor fellow will awaken, for example, and think he's going to be late for work, and then next he will wonder if his wife is in a good temper and will get his breakfast, or if he will have to go without. So with things like that on his mind, he's not much in a mood to remember what happened in the night. So make a definite practice. Keep a notebook and a pencil by your bedside, and the very first thing you do when you awaken, write down immediately everything you remember of the night. With practice, you'll find it's easy. And with a bit more practice, you won't need your notebook and your pencil. You'll carry out your days on earth with much more contentment, knowing that this is just a hard school and nothing more. Knowing that at the end of the school term, you'll be able to return home. Of late, there seems to have been a rash of advertisements from all sorts of firms who purport to teach one sleep learning. They want to sell one expensive gizmos and even more expensive taped courses, complete with time switch and headphones, under the pillow speakers and what have you. Now, it's quite impossible for anyone to learn anything worthwhile while asleep. To start with, the driver of the body is away, and all that is left is a sort of crummy caretaker called the subconscious. And very extensive researches in the leading countries of the world have proved beyond doubt that sleep learning is not possible. It doesn't work. If you stay awake, that is, if you are slow in going to sleep, then you may pick up a few snatches of conversation from the tapes. But there's no easy way of learning. You can't press a button and say, "Hey, presto," to a machine, because that will not make you a genius overnight. Instead, it will interrupt your sleep rhythm and make you bad-tempered, unmentionable you-know-what. Suppose you leave your car in the garage while you go in your house to have your buttered beans on toast or whatever it is that you have before going to bed. Well, you would be quite a bit of an optimist in thinking that your car was going to learn through tapes while you were away from it. The car manufacturers admittedly make several lurid and impossible claims for their mechanized tin boxes. No, I do not own a car. But even the most optimistic of car advertisers would balk at saying their cars would learn during the owner's sleep. Your body is just a vehicle whereby your overself can gain some experience on Earth and on a few other assorted planets, so don't give yourself a lot of airs about how clever you are, how important you are, and all that. Because when it comes down to brass tacks, or whatever standard of value you want to use, you are just a lump of protoplasm which is driven around by day by an owner who happens to be your overself. You can liken it to the Irishman and his donkey. The donkey stays in the stable by night. But no amount of tapes will enable the donkey to speak English or even American. Yet during the day, The owner can be taught to learn, even American. It might be worth trying to teach an Irishman Welsh one day to see if that can be done. I think, actually, I deserve a medal for pointing out to you some of these things which are designed to take your hard-earned money from you. Always think, what's behind the advertisement? Well, obviously, the advertiser wants to get your money. It reminds me of the people who advertise how to make a million in, say, 3 easy lessons, or how to forecast the Irish sweepstake and win that first prize. If these people could do such things, then they wouldn't bother to advertise now, would they? And if they can't do it, well, they have to make money in some other way by pretending that they can make millions in a month. They can, if enough people reply to their advertisements, but don't you be one of them. Button up your pocket. Keep your handbag shut. Keep your mouth shut, too, and your ears wide open. Oh, glory be, and all the rest of it. Now here's a question. You'd better get ready to read this one carefully. You say the subconscious is stupid, and yet in chapters of life it is said to be very, very intelligent. It seems to be more intelligent than the part of us, you say, is 1/10 conscious. Now tell us straight out, is it stupid or is it super intelligent? If we're going down into basics again, like this, then we have to say that the subconscious is neither intelligent nor unintelligent, because it doesn't have intelligence. It's a different sort of thing altogether. The subconscious is just a repository of knowledge. Good knowledge, bad knowledge, it's just a filing system. It contains all you have ever heard, all you have ever seen, all you have ever experienced. It reminds your automatic responses when to breathe in and when to breathe out. It reminds part of you to wriggle and screech if you're tickled. It's just an automatic reminder. Would you say that a librarian is intelligent? Well, that's a matter of opinion, of course. I know I tried to deal with one of those silly librarians at a famous library in London, the ones who put down details, and I tried to tell these people that the details they were putting down about me were utterly and incontrovertibly incorrect. But it's such a job convincing some of them, and I am left with the indelible opinion that the record library librarians at that famous library are not intelligent. But anyway, that's just a matter of opinion. Let us make that query again, just for the sake of answering this question. Would you consider that a librarian was a genius? Would you consider that a librarian could answer any question about anything and say what any person has said before? Well, of course you couldn't, not even if you were a librarian yourself could you make such claims. Instead, you'd say, quite correctly, that no, there's no such knowledge in a conscious human, but a librarian knows where to find certain information. The best librarians are those who can find the information fastest. You and I could go to a library and fumble our way through certain filing cabinets in search of a book title containing matter on a subject of interest. Then we would find we had to refer to something else, and then we'd find that book was out of print or out of circulation or out of the library. We would waste half a day or more. Yet, by asking a librarian, there is a second during which he has an absolutely blank expression, and then the penny seems to drop with a clank, and he or she gets into motion and produces the book with the desired information. If he or she is good at their work, they recommend many more books. The subconscious is like that. As soon as the thinking we desires to know something, then the subconscious tries to come up with the answer. That's not intelligence. That's entirely automatic. And as it's automatic, it can be trained. Trained for what? Well, the answer is simple. Your subconscious is your memory. If you have a poor memory, it means that your conscious one-tenth is not getting through to your subconscious nine-tenths. If you have a poor memory, it means that the subconscious is falling down on the job of providing you the information which you demand. If he or she is good at the work, they recommend many more books. The subconscious is like that. As soon as the thinking we desires to know something, then the subconscious tries to come up with the answer. That's not intelligence. That is entirely automatic. And as it is automatic, it can be trained. Trained for what? Well, the answer is simple. Your subconscious is your memory. If you have a poor memory, it means that your conscious one-tenth is not getting through to your subconscious nine-tenths. If you have a poor memory, it means that the subconscious is falling down on the job of providing you the information which you demand. Supposing you want to know what Gladstone really said back in the year 18-something or other. Well, you've probably heard it. You've probably read of it. So it's in your memory. And if your subconscious cannot bring it out, it means that there is a fault in a relay somewhere. Some people can reel off a terrible lot of stuff about football or baseball teams and give all the winners, or whatever they're called, for years back. But that is because they're interested in the subject. And people cannot remember things in which they're not interested. Never having seen a football match or a baseball match and not wanting to, I haven't the vaguest idea about it. I thought that a baseball diamond, for instance, was a thing given to prize winners. No doubt somebody will write in to tell me differently. If you want to cultivate a good memory, then you have to cultivate your subconscious. You have to be interested in a subject. Until you are interested, the subconscious cannot tag on. Many of our lady readers will know all about the male film star. How many times he's been married, how many times he's been divorced, how many times he's chased his beloved, for the moment, around the world. That's easy. They can do that. But just ask them to go and get a standard fine thread from a local shop, perhaps a 3/16 standard fine thread, and they'll come back looking blanker than usual. To train your memory, that is, to train your subconscious, you should think clearly about things and assume an interest in those things. If men are sent shopping for women's things, well, they come back without a single thought in their heads. But if they took an interest in things, then their memory would improve. One can take an interest by asking oneself why a woman wants this or that or something else, and the woman can ask herself why a man should want, for instance, a 3/16th bolt of fine thread. If she can get a definite interest, then he or she can remember. If you are trying to remember something specific, such as a telephone number, then try to imagine the person to whom the telephone number belongs. Or, if you do not know the person or cannot visualize him or her, then look at the telephone number. Is it a series of circles or a lot of strokes? For example, 6, 9s, 0s become circles, as do 3s and 2s. But strokes would be 1s, 7s, etc., and of course 4s. So if you can visualize a number by circles or strokes, you can remember it. The best way is to use our old system of 3s. Repeat the telephone number 3 times while holding the sincere conviction that you will always remember that number. You can, you know, it's quite easy. Nothing difficult in it. Another thing which can be done during the period of sleep is to approach another person whom one desires to influence. Now, sleep learning is useless. That is absolutely a waste of time, because you are trying to teach the body something when the entity that controls the body is out of the body. But let us deal with something else, influencing others. Supposing that Mr. John Brown very much desires to get an appointment with the firm of the XYZ Manufacturing Company. Mr. Brown has heard that this company is an extremely good company, and that it is definitely desirable to be employed by such a firm. Mr. Brown has had some good fortune in getting an appointment with the personnel manager or someone else in authority for, say, the following day. Now, if Mr. Brown really wants to sell himself, this is what he'll do. He will get hold of any information he can about the firm, and especially about the person with whom he has the interview. That means that Mr. Brown must make a definite inquiry as to who will be doing the interviewing. Then, if it is at all possible, he'll get a photograph of the interviewer, and before going to bed that night, Mr. Brown will sit quite alone, and he will visualize himself talking to the interviewer on the morrow. Mr. Brown will convincingly state, in the privacy of his bedroom, the reasons why he would be a desirable employee, the reasons why he needs that particular appointment, the reason why he considers he is worth more than the firm normally pays. He says all this to the photograph. Then he lifts up his feet and tucks them in bed, and he puts the photograph so that it is facing him as he lies on his accustomed side. Mr. Brown goes to sleep with the firm, very definite, very emphatic intention of getting out of his body and journeying to Mr. Interviewer's house. There he will meet Mr. Interviewer out of his body, and Mr. Brown's astral will tell Mr. Interviewer's astral all that Mr. Brown has just said in the privacy of his bedroom. Fantastic? Deft? Don't you believe it? This really works. If the interviewee, I hope that is right, it means the one who's going to be interviewed, plays his cards properly, then the interviewer will give him the job. That is sure, that is definite. It really works. Now, you who want a better job or more money, go through those words again and put them into practice. You can influence people in this way, not necessarily for bad. You cannot influence a person to do that which he or she would not normally do. That is, you cannot influence a person to do an evil or wrong act, which means that some of you fellows also write in to me asking how to get power over girls. Well, you can't, friend. You can't, and don't try. Yes, innocent readers, ladies of high degree and of the utmost purity, I sometimes get letters from gentlemen who ask me to teach them to hypnotize girls, or put spells on girls, or to produce the formula of something which will render girls helpless, so that the gentleman, well, what would he do under such circumstances? Anyway, I tell them the truth, which is that, unless they go in for poisoning, they cannot influence another person to do that which the other person's conscience would not normally permit. So there you are. If your desires are pure or clean, you can influence others. You can influence others to do good, but not to do bad. Most people don't need influencing to do bad anyhow. It seems to come naturally. It might be as well here to introduce a question having bearing on some of the remarks made in previous chapters. The question is, you say that people come to this earth time and time again until the person concerned does his specific task. You also say that at times groups of people come for the same purpose. Can you give any definite illustration on that point? As a matter of fact, yes, quite definitely yes. Now, I had a cutting some time ago in the Spanish language, and this Spanish language thing gave a lot of details about a magazine called Excalibur, which had been published some years ago, apparently in Durban, South Africa. I have only a very, very brief comment on the whole matter, but it seems the magazine published some remarkable proven parallels between the life and death of President Lincoln of the U.S. and President Kennedy of the U.S. This will so adequately reply to many querents that I will give all the details here. Let us do them numerically, as then it will be so much easier if you want to refer to them or discuss them with your friends. And so here the first one is. 1. President Lincoln was elected to that office in the year 1860. That, of course, can be ascertained from history books. So, Lincoln became president in 1860. And here's the first coincidence. Kennedy became president in 1960, 100 years later. Number 2. it might shake you to know that President Lincoln was assassinated on a Friday. President Kennedy was assassinated on a Friday. Number 3. You may have read that President Lincoln was at the theater enjoying a stage show in the presence of his wife, and he was then assassinated in the presence of his wife. President Kennedy was visiting Dallas, Texas, and he was riding in a car with his wife. He also was enjoying the show, that is, the show of public acclaim, etc. Number 4. President Lincoln was shot in the back while sitting in a box at the theater. President Kennedy was shot in the back while sitting in a car. Number 5. President Lincoln was succeeded by a man called Johnson. Johnson became president after President Lincoln. But in Texas, President Kennedy was killed and Vice President Johnson was sworn in as the President of the USA on board an aircraft bringing the body of the late president and the living new president back to the Capitol. 6. But we have not finished with our list of coincidences, not by a long way. The Johnson who succeeded President Lincoln was a Democrat from the South USA. And Lyndon Johnson, who succeeded President Kennedy, also is a Democrat from the South. He's from Texas. So that is quite a good list of coincidences, isn't it? Though to show that there is more than chance taking a part in things, enough to show that there must be some divine plan making the entity who was President Lincoln perhaps come back as Kennedy so that a task could be accomplished. So all right, let's get back with the list. Number 7. Both the Johnsons had been members of the Senate before becoming president. Number 8. Lincoln's successor was Andrew Johnson. Now really read this. Andrew Johnson was born in 1808. But the Johnson who succeeded President Kennedy was born in 1908. Number 9. Lincoln was assassinated by a rather strange sort of a person, a thoroughly dissatisfied sort of a person, if we're to believe the report, which is now history. And that assassin of Lincoln was John Wilkes Booth, and he was born in 1839. Lee Harvey Oswald, who, it was stated, murdered President Kennedy, appears also to have been a very dissatisfied sort of person who had been in trouble all too frequently, and he was born in 1939. Number 10. To continue with our list of coincidences, Booth was assassinated before he could be brought to trial, but so was Oswald. Oswald was shot while being moved by the police and before he could be brought to trial. Number 11. These coincidences, as you have seen, extend not only to the presidents and the assassins, but also to the wives of the presidents, because Mrs. Lincoln, the wife of President Lincoln, lost a child while in the White House, and Mrs. Kennedy, wife of President Kennedy, lost a child while in the White House, too. Number 12. Lincoln had a secretary. The secretary was named Kennedy. Secretary Kennedy advised President Lincoln most strongly not to go to the theater where he was assassinated. President Kennedy had a secretary also, and he was named Lincoln. And Secretary Lincoln strongly advised President Kennedy not to go to Dallas. Number 13. John Wilkes Booth shot President Lincoln in the back while the president was watching a show, and then the assassin, Booth, ran to hide in a store. But Lee Harvey Oswald shot at Kennedy from a store, and he ran to hide in a theater. Just read that carefully again and see how very strange that is. One assassin shot in a theater and hid in a store. The other one shot from a store and hid in a theater. Number 14. L-I-N-C-O-L-N is 7 letters, and if you count up K-E-N-N-E-D-Y, you will find that that also has 7 letters. Number 15. If you count John Wilkes Booth, you will find that there are 15 letters. And if you count Lee Harvey Oswald, you find also that his was 15 letters. Number 16. It is believed that Oswald killed Kennedy, and Oswald had accomplices. None of this has been actually, definitely, incontrovertibly proven. It's a matter of circumstantial evidence. No one can prove that Booth murdered Lincoln. In the same way, Oswald, it was stated, had accomplices, but it has not been conclusively proven that Oswald did murder Kennedy, and it's not been proven that Oswald had accomplices. Let's face it, quite bluntly, circumstantial evidence points clearly at Booth and at Oswald. But again, how much of what we read was actual truth, and how much was the press prejudging and pre-condemning a man? We do not know. And I point out this because it is another coincidence in the case of the two men. Number 17. You will remember that the man called Ruby, who was a bit of a fanatic, killed Oswald. He shot Oswald in front of the television cameras. He just pushed his way past the police, pointed a gun, and pulled the trigger. But Boston Corbett was also a bit of a fanatic. He too believed that he was doing right when he murdered John Wilkes Booth. In both cases, these two men killed the man suspected and accused of the murder of a president, and in both cases, it was stated that the second assassin, that is, Corbett and Ruby, did so out of excessive loyalty for the president of the time. But in neither case is the actual motive established. In another book, I wrote about the overself managing a group of puppets. Well, you think about that in the light of this information, where two presidents were elected 100 years apart, both were assassinated on a Friday, and, looking through the list again and see all the different coincidences, now do you seriously believe that these could just be coincidences? It isn't really possible, you know. My own belief is that Lincoln did not do his job, and so he had to come back to substantially the same job to finish what he did not do before. The only way to come back was to come back as one who would be president of the U.S., which is what he did. You can take it that sometimes an overself has dress rehearsals with puppets. So in the case of Lincoln, the stage was set, appropriately enough, at a theater, and a president was assassinated. Nothing was proved against the assumed murderer, and the assumed murderer was assassinated by another person. It was all most unsatisfactory. Motives were unknown, and nothing was ever proved against anyone. So perhaps the overself got a bit fed up with such a waste of time and effort, and another arrangement was made for 100 years later, because in the astral world, time is different from here, you know? The other side of death, the astral could have sat down and scratched his metaphorical head, so to speak, and wondered what to do next. Well, by the time he had fidgeted around and scratched a bit more, 100 years by Earth time would be slipping by. One also wonders, what happens now? Was that overself satisfied with the second attempt, or will there be a third? Personally, I believe that we shall yet see a president of the U.S. who is actually put in seclusion for being insane. Now, I know all the old jokes about presidents of the U.S. being mad in any case, and far be it from me to discourage them. But this time it is a serious matter, and I believe that before too long we shall see a president of the U.S. who has to be relieved of his duties because he's too insane to continue. I also believe that we shall see another very difficult thing. I believe that we shall see many most important and influential members of the U.S. government indicted for communist activities, for giving aid and comfort to the enemy, and for selling out their own country. Some of you who are fairly young will see all that, because it is going to happen. There are going to be some truly horrendous things happening to the U.S., so keep your radio switched on in the next few years. End of chapter 5.